Olá e bem-vindo ao último Midori House especial das Casas Olímpicas aqui na Monaco 24, com Steve Bloomfield e Sophie Grove.
As London begins to wind down, the view has already shifted towards Rio 2016. So fittingly, we end this fortnight's Special Olympic series with a live broadcast from Casa Brasil at Somerset House here in London.
Over the next hour, we'll find out how Rio will tackle the task of staging the next Summer Games with Marcio Fortes, President of the Brazilian Public Olympic Authority.
And with just two golds and a handful of bronze and silver, we'll assess Brazil's Olympic performance in London. We'll also hear from one of Brazil's greatest sporting legends, Pelé.
And we'll ask whether Rio and Brazil are open for business.
All that, plus a quick chat with the former mayor of London, Ken Livingstone, who is an integral part of the winning team here, and we'll play you a couple of great Brazilian tunes too. That's all coming up on Midori House, live from Casa Brasil at Somerset House.
But first, let's cross back to the studio at Midori House for the news headlines with Jonathan Wheatley.
The International Olympic Committee Director of Communications, Mark Adams, has said today that the American cyclist Tyler Hamilton will officially be stripped of his Athens 2004 Olympic gold medal as the IOC moves to close the case involving drugs before the end of an 8-year statute of limitation.
I can confirm this morning that we have disqualified officially Tyler Hamilton. He did actually write to tell us that he was doping, but he has officially been disqualified. We have reallocated the medals as from today. So the result will now be from the Athens men's individual time trial that the gold medal will go to Ekimov from Russia. Bobby Ulick from the USA will get the silver, and Michael Rogers from Australia gets the bronze medal.
Meanwhile, in another case, the IOC has announced that it's declared Italian race walker Alex Schwarzer ineligible to compete at the London Games for an anti-doping rule violation. The announcement came 2 days after he, the reigning Olympic 50-kilometre walking champion, tearfully confessed before a packed room of reporters that he purchased and took a substance called EPO. Some better news for the Olympics now, as Britain's women have beaten New Zealand 3-1 to take the Olympic hockey bronze. The Netherlands will play world champions Argentina for the gold medal at 1900 GMT. And the mayor of Rio de Janeiro, Eduardo Paes, has praised London Mayor Boris Johnson for a successful 2012 Games ahead of the flag handover for the 2016 Olympics. Other news now, and nearly 150,000 Syrians have fled their country's violence and are registered as refugees in neighbouring countries, the United Nations has said today. The total number of refugees includes more than 50,000 recorded in Turkey, where more than 6,000 Syrians arrived this week alone. The UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards said most of the refugees came from Aleppo.
UNHCR's offices in Lebanon, Turkey, Jordan and Iraq are all reporting increases this week in the number of refugees from Syria. Our data, which shows a total population of 146,667 people as of yesterday evening. In several countries, we know there to be substantial refugee numbers, but these people have not yet registered. In Turkey, the refugee population has now exceeded 50,000 people, with more than 6,000 new arrivals recorded this week.
Commuters in Buenos Aires continue to be frustrated today as a week-long subway strike caused gridlock and packed buses for yet another day. Wage disputes prompted workers from Buenos Aires' subway system to close down turnstiles last Friday. Delegates for the strikers are meeting with government officials today. Thousands of Ghanaians clad in traditional red and black mourning cloths paid their last respects today to Ghana's late President John Atta Mills, who died suddenly after helping transform his nation into one of Africa's fastest-growing economies. Crowds of mourning Ghanaians lined the streets of the nation's capital, Accra. And finally, temperatures in the United States have set a record for the hottest July since 1895. The average temperature there last month was 77.6 degrees Fahrenheit, 3.3 degrees above the average temperature for the 20th century. The Great Plains and the Midwest were badly affected by the heat and dry conditions, with the loss of vital corn crops, and Virginia in the south had its warmest July on record. Last month also contributed to the warmest 12-month period recorded in the United States. And those are the stories at the top of the hour here on Monaco 24.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. You're listening to a very special edition of Midori House. It's the grand finale of our Olympic series. Oh. It's all over, Sophie.
You're feeling sad.
I am, actually.
How
I've
can
loved
you?
These. It's They've been amazing.
They have been so much fun. This place where we are is fantastic, though. This is really my highlight.
Set the scene for us, Sophie. What is Casa Brasil at Somerset House like?
Well, it's a kind of incongruous mix of amazing Brazilian sort of a party on the terrace here and this Palladian, incredible setting that is Somerset House. There's an incredible courtyard with these fountains and then children frolicking around in them. It's sunny at last here. It feels like a carnival. It's a really wonderful spot they've got.
And all the children seem to be wearing Brazil shirts as well, even though very few of them, to my mind, look Brazilian.
Even the babies. It's very yellow. And there's an amazing bar, actually, overlooking the Thames with this incredible canopy, and then there's people sipping caipirinhas. We're going to join them soon, but it's really, we've got a quieter corner here, but there's a band warming up outside, I saw.
There is, and just on cue, the band started actually warming up. We've also got a little bit of colour in the room because Fernando Augusto Pacheco is here in a what I can only describe as the Brazilian flag in clothes. You heard his voice at the top of the show. That clearly wasn't my Portuguese. And we're going to have many other guests throughout the show as we're here at for a very special Midori House at Casa Brasil. It is now 18:06. You're listening to Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monocle 24.
Olimpíski teidrissa po Monocle 24.
Lontosta maailmalle Monocle 24.
Die Olympischen Spiele auf Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
With the London Olympics soon over, sadly, some focus has already shifted onto how Rio will follow in 2016. The mayor of Rio, Eduardo Peixe, has congratulated London for what he called a perfect event and says he's working closely with the city to learn how to prepare for Rio.
Now, if there ever was a face of Brazilian sport, it's Pelé. Widely regarded as the greatest footballer of all time, he's become one of the key faces in promoting the Rio Olympics. Earlier today, Monocle's news editor Tom Edwards asked Pelé how he thought the up-and-coming games would resolve some of Brazil's inequalities.
I am one of the Brazilians who fight for good things in Brazil. I think Brazil has a very big opportunity for the visitors, for the foreigners. Because no doubt, Brazil have a... I used to say, we are no doubt the best inside of the field, but we have a lot to show to the world than outside of the field. And even when we talk now in the ecology, we talk about the agriculture. I think Brazil is the country who has a lot of offer to everyone, no doubt. No doubt. When you say Brazil, you talk about the whole South America. Now it's open. But
and that was no other than Pelé. So high hopes for what the Games can achieve. But with the Football World Cup also scheduled to take place in Brazil in 2014, there have been some questions about whether the city can cope.
And that's where our next guest comes in. As the president of the Brazilian Olympic Authority, Marcio Forches is one of the senior public officials tasked with making sure things run smoothly when the Olympics land in Rio. And Marcio joins us now. Welcome to Casa Brasil.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much for coming. Now, anyone who's organising an Olympics or a World Cup is always asked the question, will you be ready? Are you sick of that question yet?
Yes, that's the main question. Was I have to be looking at the situation, how the projects, basic and executive ones, have been prepared, to deal with the infrastructure of the city, and also have to see all the services that are provided by government, federal, local, state, and city, in order to have everything provided. For a good, marvelous Olympic Games. Every time you say that, this is the best the better one than the previous one's better than previous one, but the best one. So in Rio, I was supposed to have the best one. Later, the best one. It's a competition. It never ends.
It's quite a challenge. And have you found, is there anything in particular you've seen from watching London over the past two or three weeks that has made you think, oh, we can do better than that, or we need to rise a little bit more to challenge on that?
I think that you have to see what's going well. Many people come here to see what's going wrong. No, it's quite wrong. Some people from the press, no, it's wrong. No, I have to see what you do in Brazil, what British people are doing here, and we can discuss and improve, if necessary, or adopt as a rule. You know that Brazil has a tradition in organizing in very important competition games in various areas. In 1950, we had the World Cup in Brazil. I was very young, a child. I was there, a child. I was 18. Eight years old.
You're not that old.
No, yeah. And I remember that I went to Maracanã. There were about 220,000 spectators. 220,000. It's very incredible, but it happened. We have organized world championships for basketball, volleyball, League of Champions in volleyball. We had the Pan Am Games in 2007. We have a World Military Championship in 2011.
So you've got a track record.
Yes, so, and they have the national championship, football championship. It's very easy to see in the stadiums in Brazil, 60, 70, 80,000 people. So it's very important for us to mention that, because we have to adjust our tradition to what are the requirements for that IOC presents to us. So we have to mix our tradition and present the best solution. Nowadays, I have many people here from APO, Brazilian Public Authority, that are accompanying British officials in various areas. We know that government has provided security, health, transportation, the situation in the airport, and so on. I went to last Tuesday. I was in Weymouth in Portland. I was aboard a British Navy, because to see the control of transport, control of security, people from emergency, from ambulances, from the fire brigade. Everyone was aboard. I was there to see what happened.
You don't leave anything to chance.
You don't need G4S, that's for sure. I wondered, though, you know, when London bid for the Olympics, it was very much based on this legacy, this idea of social regeneration of one of the poorest areas of London. What do you hope to do socially, and how do you think you can really regenerate parts of Rio with the Olympics?
Well, the situation is quite different. In London, you have a very degraded area, as an industrial area, that's why abandoned, and you have to recover to embarrass the situation. In Brazil, we are going to have Olympic Games, the main Olympic Games center, venues will be installed in Barra da Tijuca, which is the natural expansion of the city. It's a high valued area. It's quite different. And we're going to have four clusters in the city, in Copacabana, you know, Flamengo, Ipanema, Lagoa. We're going to have the water competitions, rowing, sailing, and so on. And we have the Maracanã area, you know, the opening ceremony and the closing ceremony will take place there. And I had also Deodoro, as a military area. Many competitions will take place there. And also Barra da Tijuca, Olympic Park. So Olympic Park is in a very high-valued area. So it's quite different. But I have to answer your question. In fact, we have to provide infrastructure, not only transport, but also sanitation, for instance. We have to impair the conditions of the lagoons that are around the area, or even the Guanabara Bay could have competitions there. So we have to provide a new situation for this town itself. Let's say, if I can do anything now, I will do. But I have a plan to do in the future. Why not to do now for the Olympics? That's the difference.
Well, we're very pleased to hear. Marcia Forches, thank you very much for joining us on Midori House. Up next, we'll be asking where culture and sport meet with Helena Gasparian from the Brazilian Embassy here in London.
Thailand is the world's largest exporter of rice, shipping more grains abroad than any other nation. Perhaps even more surprisingly, we're also the world's leading producer of hard disk drives, powering global electronics. And we also make great music. So from sound bites to megabytes, you could say that we're making all the right noises. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
It's that time of year again when City Hall officials dab their concerned brows and mayors worry if they've raised their game enough to even get a mention. That's because Monocle's bumper annual quality of life survey is hitting newsstands with its ranking of the top 25 cities to call home. Pick up your copy to see whether your town is a magnetic metropolis or a city on the slide. The July-August double issue comes with many more surprises too. From 5 cities that are never going to win on metrics, but which we love anyway, to 10 surprising leaders you should know, to 50 things to improve your life. And our editors have been busy rounding up many more reports.
In the culture section, we showcase some of our favourite local heroes, from the record shop owner in Bangkok to the newsstand kiosk owner in Milan and the guy with a book truck in Tokyo. We'll also have a cultural calendar with all the best books, music, films and art for the summer ahead.
In the design section, we head to Marina City, a pair of modernist towers that is home to one of Chicago's more interesting communities. And we pack our swimming trunks and costumes and make for Lugano, where we profile this season's swimwear.
You'll find all this and more in the July-August issue of Monocle. It's on newsstands now.
Você está escutando a Monocle 24 ao vivo da Casa Brasil.
And if your Portuguese isn't good enough, he was saying it's a special edition of Midori House on Monocle 24. We're coming live from Castle Brazil with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Sophie Grove.
In a moment, we'll be hearing from Helena Gasparian, head of the Cultural and Academic Sector at the Brazilian Embassy in London. Before that, this is Gabi Amoratos with Gemendo.
That was Gemendo from the latest album by Gabi Amarantos, a pioneer of the techno breakstart, which I'm sure you know as I do, mixes 80s techno with pop.
Now, the London Olympics have not just been about sport. London has also hosted a raft of cultural events too. Countries from all over the world have been showcasing their art and literature. And fittingly, one of the stars of the show has been Brazil. And we're joined now by, at Casa Brasil, by Helena Gasparian, head of the cultural and academic sector at the Brazilian Embassy here in London. Helena, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, tell us, we've seen an amazing amount of events all around London, particularly in the week before, it sounds like there's one outside right now, a band is hotting up out in the courtyard. But I wondered, has Brazil been a real partner in this? I mean, you're hosting in 2016, and it's almost a handover of cultural events too.
Yeah, there was many different levels of government and institutions decided to make the effort to come here and showcase parts of Brazilian culture. This is not just one band. This is Sargento Pimenta, which is a Portuguese translation for Sergeant Pepper. And they play Beatles song, but with the samba drums. And they draw huge crowds in Rio, where they're from. And they've been here for almost a month now. And they've been in Hackney. They've been showcasing around London. And it's been a pleasure to see not only them, but a host of cultural manifestations from Brazil. We've had the Back to Black Festival, which was amazing, Billings Gate Market, Gilberto Gil, a lot of African musicians were invited, Brazilians musicians, Criolo, Emicida, and Vieux Facaturé playing together. It was amazing, amazing, during 3 days.
I mean, it's an incredible feat, really, that they've pulled off this amazing sporting events all over the city and the culture as well. It feels like you couldn't go anywhere without being part of some sort of installation. And what was the real highlight in terms of the Brazilian contribution?
There were many. We had the Rio Occupation. 30 artists from Rio came here for 30 days and paired with 30 English artists that are going back to Brazil now. And be there for 30 days during the UK season in Brazil, which is starting off in September. There will be the Symphonic Orchestra from São Paulo next week. We'll have an exhibition at the V&A. We have a brilliant exhibition here at Casa Brasil. We have a lot of... we'll have Egberto Gismonti at the end of the year. We had this beautiful concert of Gilberto Gil with the Barbican. So there were a number of things that were really amazing to be able to witness here.
Now, here in London during the Games, there's, as well as the Olympics, there's been the Cultural Olympiad, and that was a real part of the London bid, partly also so that people didn't get too concerned that lots of money was being spent on sport and not on culture. Is there a similar sort of plan for the Rio Games as well, or is it sort of seen as not quite as important to emphasise the culture as much?
No, it's very important for Rio. It's very important. It is we have this tradition of great cultural sort of feasts, really, festivals, parties, that the whole city transforms the whole city every year and everybody sort of takes part. So this is going to be really, I think, the best part of the Olympiad in Rio, because
you hope
with
so.
All the music and the exhibitions and the dance. So I think it's going to be one of the best parts of Rio's Olympiad.
And I wondered, I mean, do you feature in the closing ceremony on Sunday? I mean, is there a sort of cultural handover? Will you be performing in the stadium?
Yes, there's eight minutes from Brazil, and they're perform. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, but
I do know
that, you know, two major singers are coming over to sing, Marisa Monte and Emicida, I think, and there'll be, you know, a lot of dancing involved, but nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, so it's going to be a surprise.
Well, it can't be any worse than London's closing ceremony bit at Beijing with its sort of 277 bus and Boris Waveney's flag and...
Oh, no, it's not going to be like that. No, I promise you that.
We had 4 years of real...
worth it.
Helena Gasparian, Head of Cultural and Academic Sector at the Brazilian Embassy, thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing the closing ceremony, those 8 minutes of a little peek at what Rio 2016 is going to be.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Midori House.
Now we'll be handing back to the studio for the latest news headlines next, but first, this is Ja Sabia by Barbara Mendez.
That was Ja Sabia by Barbara Mendes, who we first met in Rio when she played a live set on the Monocle Weekly edition 51. You can look that up.
Lucky us. You're listening to Midori House live from Casa Brasil here on Monocle 24, where in the next half hour we'll be assessing whether Brazil is open for business and looking ahead to Rio 2016.
But first, let's head back to the studio for the latest news headlines with Jonathan.
Thanks very much. The International Olympic Committee Director of Communications, Mark Adams, has said today that the American cyclist Tyler Hamilton will officially be stripped of his Athens 2004 Olympic gold medal as the IOC moves to close the case involving drugs before the end of an 8-year statute of limitation. Meanwhile, in another case, the IOC has announced that it's declared Italian race walker Alex Schwarzer ineligible to compete at the London Games, also for an anti-doping rule violation. Other news now, and nearly 150,000 Syrians have fled their country's violence and are registered as refugees in neighbouring countries, the United Nations has said today. The total number of refugees includes more than 50,000 recorded in Turkey. Commuters in Buenos Aires continue to be frustrated today as a week-long subway strike caused gridlock and packed buses for yet another day. Wage disputes prompted workers from Buenos Aires' subway system to close down turnstiles last Friday. And thousands of Ghanaians clad in traditional red and black mourning cloths have paid their last respects today to Ghana's late President John Atta Mills, who died suddenly after helping transform his nation into one of Africa's fastest growing economies. And those are the stories for the moment here on Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. You're listening to a special edition of Midori House, the last of our Olympic specials. And what better place for our grand finale than Casa Brazil in London Somerset House, where outside in the courtyard, Sergeant Pepper Band has just struck up playing a sort of Samba Beatles covers. There we are. The boom in Brazil's economy in recent years has seen an influx of emigres returning to the country to set up shop in what is now an increasingly prosperous nation, the fifth largest economy in the world, in fact.
Our next guest, journalist and entrepreneur Angelica Mary Hillary, did just that, bringing her husband, Mark Hillary, with her. Alongside reporting on Brazilian business and culture for Reuters, the couple now run a company, IT Decisions, which helps media and technology companies setting up in Brazil. Mark is also on the board of the Public Diplomacy Committee of the British Embassy, who foster business relationships between Brazil and the UK. Welcome both to Midori House.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I wanted to start by asking how your time in London's been. Have you enjoyed the Olympics?
Yeah, it's been a great experience. Yeah, it's been very special and intense.
Intense in a good way.
Yeah, intense in a really good way, yes. We were fortunate enough to take part in a lot of the sporting events, reporting from them, and talking to the foreign tourists, also the Brazilians, and just soaking up the atmosphere.
Now, I wanted to get a sense of how you met. I mean, it's an interesting partnership that you've got going sort of across the two nations. Where did you first meet, and how did your sort of business come about?
How the business or us as a partner?
Well, let's start with you.
She's a journalist, and I'd written some books about doing business with emerging economies like India. And so she used to ring me up to try and get quotes quite often. And we ended up meeting at a mutual friend's leaving party when he was leaving the magazine. So it was all to do with the industry itself.
And you've now got a business in Brazil. I mean, talk us through how the business climate has changed over the past few years, because, you know, we can look at the figures and see, well, you know, said, you know, Brazil's now the fifth largest economy, you know, huge amounts of growth every year. But, I mean, in terms of actually being there on the ground, what's it like running a business?
Running a business is it's an interesting experience. It's as cliche as it might sound, it's a bit of a roller coaster, especially when it comes to actually setting up shop in Brazil and all the bureaucracy that you have to contend with. And also, just to give you an example, in the UK, you can set up a business in 5 minutes online, and you're ready to go. In Brazil, it can take you up to 6 months.
Wow. and that's if you're lucky.
That's right.
And in terms of, you know, you've got the World Cup coming up in 2 years, you've got the Olympics in 4 years. I mean, we've seen just in London what's happened to things here. Sort of people were like, oh, my God, everyone's coming. Quick, get dressed, get everything good. You know, the whole world is coming. Is there that same sort of atmosphere starting to build in Rio and elsewhere in Brazil, that actually there's a few things that need to get sorted out just in time?
Yeah, I think that there are two different kinds of events, because with the World Cup in 2 years, that's across Brazil in many different cities. And with the Olympics, it'll just be focused on Rio. But obviously the World Cup is the first one coming, and they have started focusing on things like making sure taxi drivers, hospitality staff at hotels and that can actually speak English. Because, you know, obviously Brazil is a Portuguese-speaking country, but there's not a very high penetration of, like, people who can use English, even taxi drivers, for example. So the government has certainly started approaching those kind of problems a couple of years out. And so you can see a sort of a mentality that they really want to get things ready. The stadiums themselves are already under construction, planned to be ready next year. So it looks okay so far.
And Angelica, from a business point of view, do you think that enough things will change business-wise to improve the situation ahead of the Olympics?
I guess the Olympics won't change much in the sense of in where we are right now. I think things have been changing in the last 10 years and will continue to change regardless of whether we're having these big events or not. Things like infrastructure and readiness to operate in a more international, global business setting, like Mark has just mentioned, have been going on and will continue to go on. But I think there are other things that need to be happening in order for things to change, like a more coherent approach to how you support entrepreneurs, for example. There is not much of a culture supporting new businesses. It's still very complicated to bring new ideas to life.
And in terms of the cultural shift of you lived here for so many years and moved back there, what really struck you as the difference? What do you tell your clients is the main difference when you're doing business in Brazil?
Well, things like you can really see when I left Brazil nearly 12 years ago, you didn't really have a really the main underground line that cuts across the business district had only 3 stations, and today it has more than 10. So, for example, getting around is a lot easier. Also, people have a lot more confident that, at the same time that people don't really know how to, a lot of people don't know how to jump in that bandwagon of opportunity. People still feel confident that, the economy is really happening and that there is opportunity, but you don't know quite how to make the most of it. Like, people are very confident.
If you summarize, in one word, you can say it's trust. That's the big difference in operating a business here and over there. I mean, as a company director here, I can write a check, I can sign a document, and my signature is my bond. The whoever receives that trusts me. In Brazil, you can't do that. I mean, I can't sign anything without going to a notary's office and having it verified and confirmed that I am who I say I am. And that is also why there is a great difficulty in just daily operations running a business in Brazil. And that's one of the biggest things about even starting a company there, because you have endless forms to fill out.
Perhaps with a little bit of a boost from the Olympics, then Brazil will be well on its way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there have been efforts from all sorts of directions, from for example, from if we're talking about São Paulo, which is where most of the business gets done, the mayor's office is making an effort to make the city more competitive, and that's been happening in all the most of the main hubs, and also from the federal government, that there has been a real concern in making Brazil more competitive, less tax burdensome, and so on.
Angelica Murray and Mark Hillary, thank you very much for joining us here on Midori House.
You're listening to Monocle 24, and after this short break, we'll be talking to the mayor who brought the Olympics to London,
Not Boris, but Ken.
Thailand's famous hospitality is ingrained in our culture. From the warmest of welcomes to our culinary skill. That's why hospitality businesses like the world's best cooking school, Le Cordon Bleu, come to Thailand to sample our unique mix of exquisite cuisine and transcendent service. And all this against a soundtrack of fantastic homemade music. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
Wherever you're going this summer, and whether it's for work or play, let Monocle's editors be your travel companions. We've just refreshed and revised our team's guides to the world's top business cities and resorts, so you can have our 25-25 travel guide series in the palm of your hand with the Monocle app, available from iTunes, or download free guides from monocle.com. From São Paulo to New York, Capri to St. Bart's, we can show you where to long lunch or go for your morning run. Just head to the iTunes App Store and download the Monocle app. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
You're listening to Monocle 24 live from Casa Brasil.
Oh, he said it in English. I like the Portuguese version. There we are. This is Midori House live from Casa Brasil here on Monocle 24 with me, Steve Bloomfield, and Sophie Grove. It's the last of our Olympic specials. We're ending here in Brazil because Brazil is obviously the next country to take up the baton. Up next on this show, we'll be getting former London Mayor Ken Livingstone's take on the Games. But first, this is Iema Forte by Brazilian artist Quinho.
And that was Iema Forte by Quinho, a soothing slice of Brazilian summer from his latest album.
Now, Casa Brasil couldn't have picked a better spot on this humid summer's day. As well as its grand Palladian architecture, Somerset House also has dozens of fountains where children can cool off.
And in the crowds with his kids, we found the former Mayor of London, Ken Livingstone. Ken was in office when London secured the bid for the 2012 Games and was responsible for much of the architecture and infrastructure we've seen over the past 2 weeks. I started by asking him whether the Games had lived up to his vision.
When I went round the Olympic Park on the opening ceremony, with the exception of the Helter Skelter that was added, it's exactly as we planned it back in 2006. And that's why it came in on budget. Politicians weren't allowed to fiddle with it and add things and change. The other thing is, 12 years ago when the British Olympic Association came to me and said, would you support the bid? And I agreed. What they wanted was a great Games the whole world would remember and would lift British athletics. What I wanted was an infrastructure to transform the poorest part of England. We've both got what we wanted. I watched that former chair, Craig Reedy, put the gold medal around Jessica Ennis, and I know he was thinking, this is what we dreamed of, the best day for athletics Britain's had for a century.
And in terms of Londoners themselves, do you think they've really risen to the challenge of hosting these Games?
Oh, yeah. When you talk to the journalists that have covered some of them Games going back to Munich, they all say nothing's beaten this. You can't match China's opening ceremony because we mostly haven't got 5,000 drummers in London to do it, or Britain to do it even. But in terms of getting the balance right between really great sporting activity and every seat basically taken. For that Super Saturday when Jessica Ennis won, there were 2 million applications for the 80,000 seats. And we always knew, the Brits love sport, they will come, and they filled virtually every venue.
And in terms of how it's been run by Boris Johnson, are you willing to give him the credit for doing a good job in terms of, his input?
Well, he's carried on the plan we devised. And we actually, the contract we signed with the IOC, we built in a check that no change of mayor or change of government could change the plan. And that's why it came in on budget. And so he's carried on with exactly what he picked up. I'm delighted.
In terms of the legacy, and it was key to securing the bid in the first place, do you think that's on track? I mean, do you think this government really has taken the legacy seriously, and will we see the effects?
The physical legacy was already sorted because we got the London Overground, new DLR lines, the stadia and the aquatic centre in an area where we can continue using them for decades, an amazing park in one of the most polluted. I mean, we had to purify 6 feet deep the soil on that site. It was, I mean, the original industrial site for London. So the legacy has been brilliant, but the real extra bonus is that the land south of the Olympic site, down to the River Thames, is room for 40,000 homes and 50,000 jobs. And what the mayor and government have got to do now is get off their backside and get round to the new firms in India and China and Brazil, saying, you've got to do business in Europe. We've got a site at the heart of a great world city. Brownfield site. I mean, whatever you want to create, there's the space for it.
And what events have you attended? Have you managed to enjoy yourself this time round?
I mean, I was a guest of Seb Coe at the opening ceremony. I've watched the rest of it like most Brits have at home. And because moving the whole family in, the kids loved it. They just sit there and you get to switch. I mean, short of inventing Star Trek, beam me up, Scotty technology, it's only sitting at home you see every event.
And finally, we're here at Casa Brasil. Do you have any advice to Rio and the organisers there? What can they take from these games that they can use in Rio?
Well, they got a problem like Athens, which is people in Rio really love their cars. And this has been the most intense public transport games ever. And they should try and take the chance to get the people of Rio out the car and onto a really good new bus system. Unlike us, there's a lot of sites spread around, so they really need basically physically separate bus lanes so that people in buses can get there really quickly. But you see, we bid for legacy, and there's an element of that with Rio. But Rio, it's also like China. It's a statement about the emergence of a great world power. I mean, that they're now seventh or sixth in the economic stakes. They will eventually be fourth. They'll eventually displace Japan. So Rio, like Beijing, will be a statement saying, here's a great new world power coming onto the scene. We couldn't say that about England, could we?
We did a good enough job. I think London brushed up well.
Oh, really? Brilliant. The opening ceremony was amazing. I first met Danny Boyle when he was protesting 30 years ago when the judges overturned the fares cut that I'd done at the GLC, so we go back a long way.
Some people thought it was quite a socialist agenda, but it went down very well.
Well, it went away because I think all my political life, the Tory party has said left-wingers can't really be patriotic. They can't really love Britain. And what Danny Boyle showed is you can, and we do.
That was former Mayor of London Ken Livingstone escaping a chance to mention the GLC. Right now, the world is looking at London, but in 4 years, it'll be the turn of Rio to be in the spotlight as host of the 2014 World Cup. And we might have mentioned this, but the 2016 Summer Olympics too.
Well, joining us now to discuss how the city is preparing for the event is Michael Charlton, International Director for Neo Negocios, Rio's investment agency. Michael has been using the World Cup and the Olympics as a tool to attract wider investment in the city from around the world. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
So tell me first, how much of a boon is the Olympics and for investment?
Well, clearly both the World Cup and the Olympics creates a catalyst that we can use to tell a wider story about what's happening in Rio. And it's really that wider story that we want to tell the world. Not enough is known about Brazil internationally, not enough is known about Rio internationally. So people know us from the postcards, they know us from carnival, from beaches, from beautiful girls, from Ipanema, etc. And whilst, of course, we want to reinforce all of that, we also want to change the brand perception of Rio globally and demonstrate to people that Rio is one of the hottest business cities on the planet.
And how do you go about doing that? Because it's not necessarily an easy thing to do, is it?
sports events and mega events like the World Cup and the Olympics, clearly people are interested globally. So I was talking to a group of Chinese investors and people from the Chinese government the other day. And, you know, they're really passionate about using sport as a mechanism to tell a story. So when I explained that that's equally what we were doing, you know, people get it. So people, you know, want to go to the World Cup, they want to go to the Olympics. So that creates us the platform, and we can use that to tell this broader story. So about the rapidly changing face of Rio, about the renaissance that's happening in the city, about the oil and gas boom, about the huge level of investment in infrastructure, about improvement in the middle class and hence the consumer opportunities that that creates, about improvements in education, about reductions in crime. So it creates a platform because people are interested in hearing about the World Cup and the Olympics, and then you can use that to dovetail a broader set of messages. And we've used London as the start of our campaign. So we've been headquartered here at Casa Brasil. We've hosted a whole series of events focused on everything from the opportunities in the audiovisual industry to opportunities in technology and innovation to energy and the business of sport. And we've had unprecedented interest.
I wondered also, I mean, you mentioned the amazing appeal of that sort of carnival aspect of Brazilian culture. Is that, to some extent, difficult to avoid in a way when you're trying to promote something very serious?
Well, we don't want to avoid it. I mean, it's part of our culture. Brazilians have a contagious sense of spirit, and we absolutely want people to recognise that and that to feel that. Rio is often referred to as the marvellous city, and you know we're marvellous hosts and we will host an amazing party for both the World Cup and the Olympics, but equally we're a marvellous city for business. So it's about having that juxtaposition between the serious but also the fun. And of course one of the reasons that people gravitate to Rio from a business perspective is lifestyle. You know, people want that combination of all of the hard factors that make Rio such a compelling business centre in the Southern Hemisphere, but equally they want their people to have a good quality of life and they want to be able to attract and retain talent, and if you have an amazing lifestyle you can achieve that.
Now we just heard Ken Livingstone, who you know well as because you used to do a similar job here in London as well, saying that part of the problem that Rio has is its cars and a lack of really good sustainable public transport. Are those things that you in your role can try and persuade the mayor to put money behind or the federal government to do, or is it sort of slightly a losing battle at times?
No, very much so. The role of Rio Negocios is to kind of map the city from a business perspective, to understand the strengths and weaknesses of the city, then to take that to market globally. But of course, in doing that, we talk to a huge range of investors around the world from different sectors, and they give us feedback on what they think about the city. We can then use that feedback to influence public policy and to influence the mayor and the city council in terms of their decisions. With respect to cars, I mean, clearly the city has challenges in terms of its physical geography, the most beautiful city in the world, but what comes with that is mountains and sea, and therefore you have a corridor in the middle where traffic has to travel. The good thing is that the Olympics is accelerating investment in public transport. So we're building 140 kilometres of new bus rapid transport, and that will result in an increase of people utilising public transport from the current 16% to 62% by the time of the Olympics in 2016.
Michael Charlton, thank you very much for joining us here on Midori House, and best of luck with everything in the 4 years ahead. That brings us to the end, not just of this show, but to our entire series of Midori House Olympic programmes. Thank you to everyone here at Casa Brasil at Somerset House. You've been absolutely fantastic hosts, and indeed to everyone that we've visited over the last 2 weeks, from Career House to Africa Village, from Imagination Denmark, which was my favourite, I think, in terms of... I can't say that to you here, can I? Oh, no, I've said it. No. It was just a houseboat. It was lovely. Anyway, to Jamaica House. We've had an amazing couple of weeks.
Our producer today was Katie Bilboa, with help from Adrian Craddock, Paul Noble, Toby Hammond and Tom Edwards. Special thanks also to Dawn Trump, Alex Bishop, Alex Fennell for helping make the last 2 weeks happen.
I don't think we missed anyone out there, have we? Up next, after the news, you can catch the latest edition of The Menu with Marcus Hippie. But from all of us here at Casa Brazil, in the sunshine at London Somerset House, it's goodbye from us. I'm Steve Bloomfield.
And I'm Sophie Grove.
Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.